Vetsana, on the 27th of June, 1979. Dhamma is the most important thing. With the Lord Buddha and the Savakas, they were not keen on building temples and viharas. But when they had attained to and realized Dhamma, see how they managed to propagate the teaching. In the present generation, consider Tan Ajahnman, for example. Did he build any temples? All he did was to develop the citta and the heart to his utmost ability until he had attained to wisdom. He then taught the world the Dhamma. Look at his example and see what it is like. There are people all over Thailand who had great respect and esteem for Tan Ajahnman, even people from abroad as well. When one has attained to the result of Dhamma and has penetrated and realize the truth, then the ability to teach the world is immeasurable. Investigate. This is what it is like when the Dhamma is inside the heart. The heart is of paramount importance and has great power that is capable of teaching the world. This is when the heart has developed and established the Dhamma inside it. But which temple or shrine hall is capable of teaching the world the Dhamma and of making people good? Have you seen any such shrine hall capable of doing this? I am not speaking in contempt. I am merely saying this based on the principle of reason. I am not saying that shrine halls should not be built. In places where it is appropriate for the construction of a shrine hall, I would not have anything to say about it. But in places where it should not be done, then it should not be done, because it only destroys those particular places. This place, for example, is the place for the development of the heart, so that one can establish it with a firm basis. And when a bhikkhu has benefited from his practice, just imagine what benefit he can do for the world. I have reflected on and considered this point. Therefore, all of you who come here from the various parts of the country and the world, please be earnest and take this to heart. I always have compassion for you, and that is why I have never let go of my responsibilities in teaching you. Although I may not always have the time to teach the laity, I always find the time to teach the bhikkhus. This is for the benefit of the bhikkhu himself, as well as for the benefit that may arise after the bhikkhu has heard the teaching, until he has taken it up, practiced it, until he realizes and attains to Dhamma himself. Then he can also help the world by propagating the Dhamma, which will happen naturally. When we have the treasure, then we can dispense it. But to follow the way of dispensing things that we don't have and haven't acquired, this is just the way of going down and sinking. When one has not learned for oneself yet, and one takes up the duty of teaching other people, it will just turn out to be mundane or worldly, and will probably be worse than the world itself. This is not the way of the Lord Buddha and the Savakas, who led the way. They all realized Dhamma before they taught the world. If they had not realized Dhamma, then what could they have taken to teach the world with? What basis or principle is there in empty wind? For this has no substance with which to attract the hearts of others, or a basis for the people to depend on. Unlike when we have established the Dhamma within our hearts, and then go on and teach the people. For those who have established the Dhamma in their hearts, no matter where they are, whether they are just sitting down or in another place, they will always have that Dhamma quality imbued within themselves. And this is the worth of the development and training of one's citta. So please set up your determination. Be serious and earnest in your practice. Don't speculate about the place of the Magga, Phala, and Nibbana, other than within the body and the citta. For they are found right within these two places. They are found right within the circle of the five khandhas. Take this to heart. Whatever things become involved with the heart, like the forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects, for instance, these things entangle the heart. This is because both love and hate are entangling influences. This is because the heart is attached to love and hate. That is why it is necessary to investigate and examine, so that when the citta has understood these things, then it will be able to let go of them. This is the relinquishment following the understanding that arises from one's investigation. In the end, everything converges into the heart. When the heart is not confused or anxious, because Panya has constantly fed it with the right information, the heart will then be without worry. And when one does the practice of Samadhi Bhavana, one can easily attain to calm. The heart will be cool and calm. One must solve the problem with the investigation of Panya when the time is appropriate to do so. Don't remain doing nothing. Panya is extremely important. Why sati is the basic ground. Sati is the factor that directs the work, so that when one is doing one's practice, one always does it with attention and attentiveness. Panya will then be able to work and function at its fullest capacity. When one has seen the result from the investigation of Panya, then that Panya will begin to increase in its intensity. This is because one has now gained encouragement. It is similar to a businessman who has made some profit. He will then begin to be greatly encouraged, and he will strive harder in his work. But if one is constantly losing, then one will be discouraged and become lazy. But when one makes a lot of profit, one becomes greatly encouraged. It is the same way with the practice for the development of the heart. When one has gained some results and progressed, then one will become encouraged because one now has gained some profit. Don't remain sitting down like a tree stump without having any appreciation for the truth and Dhamma, instead becoming involved with all the troubling affairs of the world, which are solely the affair of the kilesas. For these are the things that will oppress the citta and make it become increasingly depressed and become immersed in the delusion of thinking about these things, totally ignorant of the truth and Dhamma. So when one is walking jhāṅgama, it is only a matter of moving one's legs. And when one is sitting in samādhi, it is only a matter of physical posture. But the real action of the citta is to become involved with all the troubling affairs of the world of saṃsāra, like the forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects, and about the past, and about the future, all in a state of total confusion. So how can it make any profit? All there is just loss, and one becomes totally discouraged and lazy. This is because one paves the way of one's laziness, and one then treads on that way, and the result of that laziness is dukkha, that piles over one's heart in every form of birth. This is the fruit of laziness. So one must see the harm and bane of it. Then one must use one's satipanya to come up with a different means to overcome one's laziness, doing this constantly. This is the way of a wise man. Building and developing oneself is much more important than building and developing anything else. Whether it is hard or easy, it cannot be beyond our ability. The Lord Buddha taught Dhamma that was suitable to our means and capacity, and the Dhammas that he taught to suit our abilities were about 84,000. In short, they are the Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. They are really not that many, for they are found within the circle of the body and the citta. Why can't we practice them? When we walk jhāṅgama, we should have continuous mindfulness. It is the same way when one is sitting in samadhi. One who has diligent effort or strenuous exertion is one who constantly controls and masters himself. One must not think that mastering oneself is like a thorn, and that letting oneself go according to one's heart's desire is a good thing. For this is the kilesas whispering to us. They permeate into our heart, and we become totally lost in them. One sees one's diligent effort as one's enemy, while one sees the kilesas as one's friend. If such is the way, then one is just as good as dead, and one will be born and die, again and again. Therefore, you must really be earnest, really commit yourself. Our living environment here, in this monastery, is quite suitable, though it is not similar to the Buddhist universities during the time of the Lord Buddha, when they were made up of forests and mountains. But here, there are quite enough forest areas for us. I am trying my best to help you in all respects, because I really think about your benefit. I can tell people who become involved or come into contact with this monastery, regardless of what class of people they might be. When there is a reason, I can tell them. I am not afraid of and do not have any qualms about anybody in this world. The only thing I have reservation for is Dhamma. I have more respect for Dhamma than for anyone else in this world. When it is time to speak with truth and Dhamma, I can do so. I can tell them that they should not disturb you, because during this time, you are practicing your bhavana. Don't bother them. This is what I have told them. They are now striving in their work, and if they hear any noise, when perhaps they are walking jangama, then they will have to move away. If they are sitting in bhavana, then they will have to go into a different place. So if people go there during this time, it will just be disturbing them and causing a break in their exertion. I also tell them when it is the proper time to go. I tell them with reason so that they can understand. And if they become disappointed or dismayed, I have no interest in this, because I think that speaking with reason is the most proper thing for both us and them. There is nothing wrong with that. If there is any damage or any wrong, it is because of their thinking in the wrong way. You have your privacy in your own living area. When you are sitting and you find that the body is hard on you, then you should do a lot of walking. If you are not doing any work, you should also do a lot of walking as a way of exerting yourself. You should set up your mindfulness well. Your exertion rests significantly on your mindfulness. In your investigation, you should use your body as the object, or other people's bodies, a man or a woman. And when you investigate, you must do so in order to see the true nature of them. And this is sati, panya, mindfulness and wisdom. Magga is found both internally and externally, because samudaya, the cause of dukkha, is also found both inside and outside. For instance, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects, and the attachment to them, are already a form of samudaya. All of these forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects, are found externally. You become attached to this or that person, this or that thing. And this is samudaya. You must curb and overcome this attachment with sati and panya until you understand. Then this becomes the magga, the path. So in your investigation, you can investigate the body of anyone, a man or a woman, because they can all be used as the object of investigation. You must investigate in the light of Dhamma. For instance, investigating them in the light of asupa, as unwholesome and loathsome, or as patikula, filthiness, or as a cemetery, or as anijang, dukkhang, or anatta. All of these are the truth. This you can do either internally or externally. You have to struggle and resist the kilesas, because they have always been our enemy since time immemorial. They are found within our hearts and they are always our enemies. Most of the time, it is the kilesas that have the upper hand, and we usually don't know this. If we know that, for instance, today we have lost to that particular kind of kilesa, or this particular kind of kilesa, then there is a possibility that we can come up with the means of coping with them. Or we can have the heart to develop our satipanya to strength enough to cope with fighting the kilesas. We will have the heart to develop our satipanya, satta and virya, our diligent effort, to become very strong, and eventually to be capable of leading us to victory. This is the way of a warrior. When you go into the boxing ring and you always lose and are constantly overwhelmed and knocked out, can this be possible without you being aware of it? Is this the way to do it? You should at least try to give a good fight, so that you can somehow see the possibility of gaining victory, befitting one who has satipanya, and testing your ability. But here, each day, you walk jhankama, or sit in samadhi bhavana, without ever coming up with any results. Nor can you gain calm or develop your satipanya to use to come up with some results which will give you encouragement to develop your panya further, in turn encouraging you to strive harder. But none of these results come forth. When it is the time to be tough, you must be tough. When it is the time to be moderate, you should be moderate. But when the kilesas make a strong drive, you must also make a strong drive. You have to counter them likewise. If you should die, all right, let it happen. This actually happened to me. I am not speaking without having anything to back me up. When it was time to let it all out, I really let it all out. And when this happens, it is certain or definite, I can attest this to you, that you will come across the result. This is when you will conquer the kilesas. You have to investigate and analyze on your own, because each practitioner has a different personality and character. But please be aware that the kilesas always like weakness. Why, on the other hand, Dhamma is always inclined towards firmness and strength. It is this firmness and strength that can overcome weakness. Wisdom can overcome ignorance. It is the kilesas that make people ignorant and the heart ignorant. But the kilesas themselves are not ignorant. Therefore, satipanya must be used to overcome this ignorance which is embedded within the heart, so that it steadily diminishes. The majesty and magnificence of the heart will then steadily appear. The treasure of Dhamma is of paramount importance. When the world is without this Dhamma treasure, then it becomes burning hot. External possessions alone cannot make people happy if they do not have the Dhamma treasure within their hearts. We would not be able to impart peace and coolness within the world without this Dhamma treasure. For this reason, the sasana is extremely necessary. There are those who are critical of the sasana, and who claim that it is an opiate and an addiction. If one has never practiced or known about the sasana, one would not be able to counter their claim. They say that the bhikkhus are doing nothing. But then think about pots and pans. Do you use them to plow the fields? When you harvest the rice, you then take it and cook it in the pots and pans. These things perform different functions. A generator is used to charge up batteries. And the teaching of the sasana is for the purpose of charging up the courage of people, similar to charging up batteries. This is the business of the sasana. If a sick person is not involved with or attached to the physician, then how can he ever become well? If he is not attached to or dependent on the medicine, then how can he ever be cured? He can only turn into a corpse. Think about it. A sick patient must be involved with the doctor and the medicine. They have to be interrelated. If the patient thinks that to become involved with medicines, the doctor, or the physician is wrong, then that patient will definitely die. If he thinks that his involvement with the doctor is an addiction, then again he will surely die. It is the same way with people that are afflicted with the kilesas. They are one form of patient that is afflicted with incorrectness. And if there is no clean water of the sasana to wash them, then how can these people ever become good people? Greed, hatred, and delusion are very severe. Severe enough to tear the world apart, because there are no medicines to remedy them. But when we take the Buddha sasana to use as the cleansing material to clean off these dirty things, what damage can this do? People become steadily good people, and everything becomes good. The world becomes steadily cooler and cooler. How can the sasana then be an addiction? It is similar with the patient who gets well with the medicines and the physician. How can this be an addiction? What kind of wrong can there be found in that? Narcotic drugs damage and ruin people, but these other things do not. One who does not have any contact with other people or things is just a dead person. A dead person is not interested in anything. As for us, we are still dependent on the medicine, a remedy of Dhamma. Because this medicine, a remedy of Dhamma, is extremely vital for us. Likewise, when we travel, the road is always necessary to us, as long as we have not yet reached our destination. The patient is dependent on the physician and medicines, as long as he is not yet well, whether he is addicted to them or not. These criticisms are just dirty. Dirty things coming out of dirty mouths, lacking in any reason. If one speaks from the principle of reason, then as long as one is still sick, one must always be dependent on the doctor and the medicines. So it is the same with our citta. When we are still in the path of practice, that is, as long as it is still afflicted with the kilesas, tanha and asava, then it is likewise with Dhamma. We must still depend on it. For Dhamma serves as the signpost, showing us the way. We must depend on it until we finally reach the destination. We will then reach the state of one who has let go of good and evil. It is similar to when we come up to the sala. As soon as we come up to the sala, the stairway leading to it loses its purpose. Nobody will remain clinging to the stairway. The sasana doesn't teach people to cling to things, like clinging to the stairway. And one who has cured himself doesn't cling to the doctor or the medicine either. Once the patient is cured of his illness, then his relation with the doctor and the medicine is on a different basis. It is the same with the heart. When it has developed to the highest, then the sasana doesn't have any more purpose for that particular person. He will let go of it naturally. So once one has let go, can one really say that one is still attached to it? Right now you must exert to your fullest. Let your satipanya be involved with the citta and be involved with the kilesas. It is the kilesas that are the addiction, but nobody talks about that. If the Dhamma is used to overcome and correct the kilesas, how can it be an addiction? The kilesas themselves are the addiction. They have been for kalpas and kalpas. To the extent where we cannot even account for all our forms of existence. And if we have been attached to them for that long, don't you think that it is them that are the addiction? It is very hard to find one who can let go and become weary of the kilesas. They are attached to the heart, to the extent that we cannot even see the heart. Why doesn't anybody say it in this way? If one is a sportsman, one must also speak in this way. That is, one must also accept this fact. Use your thoughts well. Sati is very important. I have constantly said that mindfulness is extremely important. And you cannot let go of it. You must always be possessed with mindfulness. You must come up with different means and techniques in your practice of bhavana. This you have to do by yourself. Look for the way in which the citta can become interested and concentrated in its work. Then your sati or mindfulness will become continuous. We should try to come up with different techniques. It doesn't mean that you should only have one parigama object. Look out for new methods, for this is the means and ability of satipanya. I also practice in this way. You have to do it until you understand. Here we are speaking about the investigation of panya, and about the internal and external things. In the four satipatthana, or the four foundations of mindfulness, it states that we should investigate both the internal and external body. At one time one should investigate the internal body, and at another time one should investigate the external body. Then at another time, one should investigate both the internal and external bodies. In short, all of these are magga, the path. They are all the correct way of investigation. And it is the same way with the inner and the external vetana. As far as the external vetana is concerned, if they arise in other people and they do not exhibit them, then we won't notice them. But in the way of practice, the external vetana is really the vetana of the body, while the internal vetana is the vetana of the citta. As far as practice is concerned, I really have a strong conviction of this. But I do not deny the vetana of other people when they experience pain and misery, and then cry and moan. But this is very far away from the four satipatthana, which are completely found within ourselves. Because if the internal and external vetana are not found within the body and the citta, where else could they be found? Then the four satipatthana would not be complete. But truly, the four satipatthana are complete in each individual, except that we don't bring them out so that we can see them vividly and clearly. For instance, the dukkha, samudaya, nirodha, and magga are found right within this body and citta. They are completely found within them, and it is the same way with the four satipatthana. They are completely found within the body and the citta as well. Once we are fully convinced that these things are completely found within ourselves, then if we take the external things and take them up to investigate and compare with what we have inside, then there is nothing wrong with that. But we must see according to Dhamma. That is, we should not have a view in contradiction to the Dhamma. Any way you want to investigate is all right. Because the Lord Buddha taught us to be wise. He didn't teach us to be ignorant. The main point is to really get yourself committed into this practice. Do it until you can see the kilesas disappear from your heart with your ability of satipanya. This can really happen. For instance, with asupa or loathsomeness investigation. Whenever I got myself really involved and committed with the investigation, I became really saddened until tears started rolling down my cheeks. I said to myself, really, is this the way to see what asupa is like? Is this really the way to see the body? This really happened when I became very saddened with these things. For this body has slowly decomposed and disappeared. Wherever satipanya had concentrated its attention, it is like pointing a torch at a particular part of the body. It gradually decomposes and disperses wherever satipanya focuses its attention. Get to see this clearly. Let there be only this image within the citta, or this image and the citta. Don't imagine or speculate about anything else. And when one has penetrated to the truth, the citta will then just let go of them in a single instant, because the citta will have understood fully. One could see that it was just particula or filthiness. And furthermore, one realizes also that it is just made up of the four elements of earth, water, fire, and air. What is there then to be deluded about? One now sees the truth as it is, and realizes that all the time it was just one's own fabrication and imagination that wipes out the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha. One then sees how powerful and clever the Kilesas really are, for they can fabricate things by seeing those things which are not beautiful as beautiful, and we believe them. These things are anicjang, that is, they are impermanent, because they are in a constantly changing state. But the Kilesas manage to fool us by telling us that these things are permanent, and we tend to believe in the Kilesas, as well as seeing the body as people, animals, I or they. Although the Lord Buddha taught us that this body is anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta, but the Kilesas wipe out all the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha. It is the same way with those people who are critical of the sasana. They try to wipe out the sasana. They do this in the same way by labeling the sasana as the opiate or the addiction. They wipe out the sasana the same way the Kilesas wipe out Dhamma. The Lord said anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta, but the citta doesn't follow and see the anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta. Instead, it follows the Kilesas and at the same time wipes out the Dhamma. Asupa can be seen very clearly, but then again, the citta cannot see it as asupa. It sees the body as something pleasant, something beautiful. These are all the affairs of the Kilesas, wiping out Dhamma. But once we have perceived and realized the truth of Dhamma, then how can we go against this truth, and at the same time have to carry the burden of this contradiction? It is this burden of attachment that weighs heavily on us day in and day out. We will just let go of them or throw them away once we have seen the truth and seen the harm of our attachment to them. After we have investigated, following the principle of the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha, when our perceptions do not run contrary to the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha, then we will gradually come to see the truth. The heart will steadily let go and become empty, peaceful, and at ease. It will then be pushing hard to find the things that it hasn't understood yet. Concerning rupa, or form, this whole body is really what rupa is all about. We must differentiate and analyze this body in aspects of asupa, or in the aspect of seeing different parts of it joined together to become one whole body, having the muscles and sinews to connect the various pieces of bone together. It's used to wrap around a dead body. What is this piece of cloth good for? Because it just wraps up a corpse. And the skin just wraps around the bones, the flesh, and all kinds of filth inside. Very similar to the piece of cloth that is used to wrap around a dead body. Investigate so that you can see the truth. Then you will let go of it naturally. No matter how thick, dark, and obscure the upadana is, it is just like the darkness of the night. Once one turns on a light, then all the darkness must disappear. It is the same with satipaṇṇa. Once it has shone down on any particular part, that particular part becomes bright. No other light in the world can be brighter than the light of paṇṇa. The light of the sun cannot penetrate or pass through opaque objects, but the light of paṇṇa can penetrate through everything. That is why this light of paṇṇa is called loka vitu, seeing clearly and knowing clearly all the truth within the three worlds. Whatever the truth that one has perceived, then the other truths are of a similar nature. This is the perception with paṇṇa that is fully impressed within the heart. And this is the way that we should investigate the body. Whatever way you find suits your personality and is comfortable for you, that is the way you should do it. For instance, if you are inclined to investigate the nature of asupa, you should concentrate on that investigation. Get to see that this body is full of asupa and filth all over. It is really a conglomeration of loathsomeness. We can see this if we are not complacent and do not let the kilesas lull us to sleep. We will then get to see the truth. Once we have investigated and come to see the truth, then we will let go. The reason why we are still attached to this body is because we do not understand it. And this is because our presumptions and assumptions that this body is I and mine have strongly bound us to it, that this body is animals and people, and that every part of this body is I and mine. So, the upadana or attachment takes hold of every piece of this body. For this reason, the Dhamma has no way to enter this body. But once paṇṇa enters it, then the truth begins to scatter our presumptions and assumptions. When we have understood fully the truth of this body, then we will let go of it and let it return to its original nature. Then it will be anālayo, which means the desireless, for we have come to extinguish this desire for the body. And once we have got to this stage alone, it can provide us with great happiness. We become very light and at ease. If one were in business, it would mean that one would have attained to a quite enormous profit. One can now establish oneself as a rich man. Now we must concentrate our investigation on the dukkha and sukha within the khandhas. They are merely vedanas, just as the Lord said. They are something that appears, and we experience them. Sukha, or happiness, arises and ceases, and so does dukkha and upekkha, which is neutral, neither sukha nor dukkha. These are both of the body and of the citta. How can we find any people, animals, I or they, in them? Once we have seen with paṇṇa, then these things are just one particular truth of a certain kind. As far as saññā is concerned, that is the most subtle of the five khandhas. For saññā can slowly permeate out to draw up pictures to fool the possessor. It can fool us subtly. As far as saṅkhāra is concerned, it tends to stir before it begins to concoct. One can feel it inside the citta before it begins to concoct, because it begins to stir first. But with sanya, there is no stirring up at all. When one focuses one's attention on the citta, then one can see that sanya has already drawn up the pictures to deceive one. The citta, or the heart, actually lives with these five khandhas. It takes these five khandhas to fool itself and deceive itself. It deceives itself with this story, or this affair, or that affair, or those people, or that animal, or this animal, and with all kinds of affairs. This is the creation of sanya, and sankhara merely concocts and creates further stories from this. Really, when it is time to get to know these things, one will get to know them. This is because of the power of panya. Whenever the citta begins to draw up any pictures, and one focuses one's panya on this, then they withdraw back inside the citta, and then disappear. Whatever pictures are created, one focuses one's attention here, and they will eventually be withdrawn inside the citta. Then one begins to realize that actually these pictures arise out of the citta. One can see this clearly. See that all of these pictures actually arise from the heart. It is the citta itself, or the heart itself, that creates all these images or pictures, and then uses them to deceive itself. As far as the real pictures are concerned, there are none to be found. They are out there, but the pictures that appear within the heart, that is, the pictures that we draw up inside, these come out of the heart. The heart is deluded in the five khandhas. It takes the creations of the five khandhas as the objects of its pleasure and sorrow for kalpas and kalpas, while vijnana flicks on and off, when it acknowledges the things that come into contact. And as those things disappear, vijnana also disappears. It is similar to a lightning flash, or the light that comes from the firefly in the night. When one continuously investigates, reflects, and meditates to go against the current or flow of the kilesas, as sati and panya do not trust these things and desire to know the true nature of these things with interest and attentiveness, then one will eventually get to know these things and what the five khandhas are all about. Once one has got to know what the five khandhas are all about, then the five khandhas are just five khandhas. When we don't know, they are still just the five khandhas, but they fall within the influence of samudaya, the cause of dukkha, although we don't understand or know about it, and that the real and genuine samudaya comes out of the heart. Now as satipanya moves in closer, as it advances in its investigation, then the scope of these things becomes narrower and narrower, as sati and panya begin to understand more and more, until eventually all these things converge and gather inside the heart. So whatever now appears, one will know that it comes out of the heart. They now cannot go out in the way of sanya, neither in the way of sankhara, to concoct up all the various stories and affairs. This is because sati and panya can now constantly catch up with them. As soon as the citta begins to concoct, then these concoctions immediately disappear, just like the light of a firefly. Once Satipanya has caught up with them, they cannot go on conjuring up all sorts of affairs and stories. When Sati is constantly aware of them, then they can only arise and cease, arise and cease. Now Satipanya will make its all-out effort to wage the final battle. All that is left now is avichara. Both avichara and the citta are one and the same thing, as they are blended together. If one is possessive of the citta, then one will also be possessive of avichara. If one cherishes the citta and has affection for it, then one will also cherish avichara and have affection for it. If one is attached to the citta, then one will also be attached to avichara. If one is deluded in the citta, then one is also deluded in avichara. For both the citta and avichara are together. At this stage, Satipanya is on the verge of moving forward or advancing. This is the only thing that it can do. Retreating is not possible. When the investigation has come to saturation point, then it will be the time for Panya to take on the size and intensity of an atomic bomb. Once the bomb is dropped at that particular point, then that particular point will burst apart and explode. Then everything will break apart and fall into pieces. Then the seed and source of birth and existences will be totally annihilated. One will then be able to see clearly that there is no more birth and death for one, because the seed and source of lives and existences, avichara, has been totally put out or destroyed. This is when the Lord said, Usitang Brahmacharyang, the end of the holy life. As soon as the citta has attained to deliverance, the knowledge that deliverance has been attained will appear simultaneously. And this is where the work or exertion of a bhikkhu comes to an end. It doesn't cease at any other place, but right here. Once avichara has been broken, it means that all the enemies have been destroyed. Then Satipanya, which functioned relentlessly, now also comes to cease. Because now Satipanya has no more work to do and no problem to solve, one does not then destroy any more kilesas, because there are no more kilesas to be destroyed. Once the chief of the Vattajaka, the revolving wheel of birth and death, has been extinguished, then everything else comes to an end. The result that we have obtained from our strenuous and arduous exertion now surpasses everything. Once we have attained to this state, no more problems with the past and the future. All the wrong presumptions have now all been destroyed. One can also perceive the present clearly. So all the problems of the past, present, and future have now come to an end. Whether he lives or dies, one who has realized this truth doesn't have any problems. It is no problem how he may die. Once one has attained to the level where there is no more problem, then everything else ceases to be a problem. So there is no problem for an arahant when he passes away. For this reason, an arahant can pass away either standing, sitting, while walking, or while lying down. He can pass away in any position that he likes. It is just like I wrote in the biography of Pra Ajahn Mun, by quoting what Than Ajahn Mun said. And what is the reason for this? It is because the dukkha vetana, which is samuti, cannot now enter into the heart to stir up or cause trouble for it anymore. So why shouldn't an arahant pass away in any position that he sees fit? For he has now transcended samuti. Dukkha vetana is samuti, and it is found within the body, and it cannot get into the heart to disturb the heart of an arahant. So there is no reason why an arahant cannot pass away as it suits his inclination. He can pass away in any position that he finds suitable for himself, as it is his last act. End of Desana.